Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Sergio Roussier, artist, Maurice Sendak fellow, who once bravely faced the fear or challenge, as so many young readers do, of reading books made only of words. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 252 of the podcast with Sergio Roussier, author, illustrator, most recently of This Is Not a Picture Book, a beautifully illustrated story of words coming to life in the imagination of a reader. We also talk of Sergio's beautiful book, Two Mice, and of the whimsy that embodies the lines through which he designs his characters. His books, they are beautiful. Enjoy our conversation. Here's episode number 252 of the podcast with Sergio Roussier. Welcome to the podcast, Sergio Roussier. I'm so excited that I get to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here with you.
I really love your work, Sergio. You make such beautiful, soft, playful, imaginative art. I want you to know that I just love your work.
Thank you. You can keep going.
I will for the next 30 minutes.
It's going to be quite boring for everybody else.
But it'll be great for me. No, I love your stuff. And I love that the way you draw characters and the voice that you have feels very your own. It feels very unique. I like that a lot.
That's beautiful to hear. Thank you. That's really nice to hear.
So I was given the honor of getting a copy of This Is Not a Picture Book, your newest book, and yes. I love it. I can't wait to talk about it, but first, could you share a little bit about what is this story? What is This Is Not a Picture Book?
Yes. This is not a picture book. It's, first thing is a picture book. It's a picture book. and it's really about... It's about the fear of reading, the challenge of reading books that are made of words only. This is a fear that I had as a young kid. I was, and I know there are many kids that go through the same experience. Maybe 5 or 6 or 7, even later, the idea of reading a book that didn't have any pictures in it was really daunting and scary, and especially boring. Yeah. I was considered a bad reader even though if I think about it, I really loved books. I loved picture books and I loved comic books. I loved comic strips and all of that. So I had books in my hands all the time, but they were not the right books. They were not the books that I was supposed to read, probably. And those longer books were scary. But as, now that I'm talking to you, I realize that mostly was the boredom that would scare me, because I remember like my brother, who was a little older than me, Marco, and he could read longer books. He was a little older, but also he was a better reader in that sense. And I would see him, I would watch him read these really long books, and they might have, you know, one illustration every 20 pages.
Yes.
And I thought, you had to wait 20 pages of text before you get to the next. So what I would do, I would, when if I, the times that I read, that I would try to read those books, I don't even know if I, I don't even think I ever finished one of those. You know, those like adventure books.
Yes.
Jules Verne, or there's an Italian writer from the beginning of the 20th century, Emilio Salgari, that's very popular still in Italy, but it's not known outside. Anyway, and so he would have stories of pirates and I don't know, slave rebellions, or I don't know, explorers or whatever. So the themes were actually quite interesting, but I remember trying to read one of his books and then skipping until I got to the page with the illustration,
yes.
The full illustration. But then I would go back. I would have to go back and reading again, knowing that the first illustration I spoiled the surprise, because I knew what would come. So I would have 40 pages now without an illustration. New illustration. Anyway. Yeah, so I mean, anyway, I think the book is about this. It's about,
yes,
conquering. Is that the word? Conquering? Yeah,
conquering.
It's about learning by yourself that books, any kind of book, can be fascinating, can be a wonderful experience. Even the ones with no pictures. But of course, there is the irony is that this is a picture book full of pictures.
Yes, I really enjoyed too in taking the tour through this book with your characters, that just the imagery that you create with your illustration, that at first we have these characters on a white background and the main character is just, yeah, kicking around the book and saying, "Stupid book."
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, book.
Of course, that's when all the kids laugh like crazy when I read it to the schools.
Yeah. Stupid book. Don't you ever want to just kick the books, children? Of course. But to see that, that then the invitation into the story, the way that we start to get pulled into the story, you have this beautiful imagery of the character walking across a log, across a ravine into this other world. And I feel like that initial walk across there, how true that is, that we walk on unsteady ground, that,
yeah,
we are unsure of our footing, that we could fall, we're afraid, we want to turn back, but the world waiting for us can be something even more beautiful. I love the way that you pulled that off in your illustration.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you like it. It's it was a long process to get to that transition in my book. I remember, like, I put down the whole book, the whole story, maybe in one day. I did all the very rough sketches, the very first dummy I did, and then of course there was a lot of work after that with my editor Victoria Rock at Chronicle, and the designer Sarah Gillingham, who did a great work, a great coaching work for me. And I remember in that very passage that you're mentioning, how to get from the beginning, where this little duckling is struggling with this book. He doesn't really know what to do with this book after he learns that it doesn't have pictures. And then the question there was, how do we make the transition? Should it be sudden? Should it be gradual? And at the end, with a conversation, with a good conversation with my editor and my art director, we were able to get to this point, and that I'm very satisfied with. And I hope people would react to that.
Oh my goodness! Yes, I think there's so much here that it makes me excited for how the children that you read it to also react, because children are so perceptive. They pick up on these things, and it's exciting for them in that same way. When the duckling crosses the log and says, "I'm not sure, words are so difficult," we're seeing in front of him this or her, just this a mess of things that don't seem to fit together. They seem out of place. Yeah. It seems so curious. And his companion, this bug.
And especially you cannot name them. You cannot call them anything, because how do you call them?
Exactly. It's not, "Oh, I see that there's a chair. I see that there's a..." No, they're all weird, unusual things until, "Wait, I know some of these words on the next page, and there is a flower." And it's exciting that it's coming together for the reader. It really, I mean, Sergio, it's so beautiful.
Thank you. That's nice to say. You were mentioning the bug, which is the companion on this adventure. And I have to say that at the beginning, when I started working on this book, the duckling was by himself, because I thought that the story should be a dialogue between the duck and the book. Mm. And I thought that, but then my editor said, "You know, I think he needs a sidekick." And I didn't think that was right at the beginning. And now it makes so much sense, because if you look at each spread, while the duckling is completely immersed in this book, and he doesn't even see what's happening, you know, outside of the book, he's just with his face in the book. But seeing the bug that walks around and runs a little, you know, forward, and then he comes back, and then he listens to the story at the same time, he actually sees the things. And Victoria was completely right. We needed a little character like the bug, who's actually a bookworm in my
oh,
mind.
Oh, I love those, that!
You know, like a little how do you call it? Silver fish?
Silverfish. Silverfish.
Anyway, because in the page when he appears, he comes out of the binding of the book. It's, you know, I don't know if you noticed that he's coming from the center, from the gutter of the book. Anyway, it's just a little thing that nobody will notice, but it's fine.
Well, that's sort of the way that I felt about that companionship. That it actually felt like the bug, and it sounds like that's exactly what's going on, is almost in a way too the personification of the book, that when we go on these journeys, we don't go alone, because we have the characters in the book, and we have that reflection. So that's something that is beautiful, to go through that and the different emotions that a story can bring us, and the worlds that it can take us to. My favorite spread in this book, Sergio, and I mean, like, this might be one of my favorite things you've ever illustrated, is the spread almost halfway through that says, "There are wild words," and there's just this tumultuous sea with waves ravaging this boat, and the duckling is just reading on while the bookworm there is a little fearful of the waves. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And it's true that there are wild words. It's true that there are words that shake you, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Words that shake you. I like that. Now, the entire book you created through pen and watercolor, right? That's typically how you work.
Pen and ink and watercolor, yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I'm not much of an experimenter, you know. you know, the idea is that when you're an artist, you should look at different techniques and colors and different tools, and that's what I usually tell my students. But then I started when I was, I don't know, I was 18 to use the watercolors, pen and ink and watercolors, and that's what I like to do. And, you know, and it's true that you can always improve anyway. So I feel like until the day I will really master it completely, I will keep doing it.
Oh, I like that. Until you master it. I love the way that, I mean, the colors just are so soft. They're so muted. And your character design is so unique. To me, it comes across as, well, here in 2011, you were named a Sendak Fellowship, right? Yes. You were the recipient, and congratulations. That's amazing. Thanks. Honor. But I see that, and I see a lot of, and this may or may not be true, but I just see a lot of Maurice's influence in your work. There's a muted palette that allows the story to not be placed in a time, just to sort of exist there. And that is powerful to have that, not for you not to think at all about when and how the art was made, but just rather that it is there. You open the book and there it is.
I'm so glad that you feel that way, because sometimes I feel bad when you see a book that might be, you know, good, interesting, funny, but you could see right away that in 5 years we will think, oh my God, this is so 2016.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Books that, I don't know, when you work on a book and you work on a book for months, sometimes years, and I feel like you should make something that has the potential to stay for forever, you know, or for a long time, that if a person picks it up in 20 years, will still be able to enjoy it. Those are the books that are really important, the books that, who cares when they were written or where they were illustrated, if they talk to you, they're good books. And yes. I'm so glad that you mentioned Maurice Sendak. You know, I grew up, when I was little, really 2-year-old, 3-year-old, I had the Little Bear series, of course, in Italian, because I was in Italy. And those books were so important for me. And I cannot tell you what I felt when I found the Maurice Sendak Fellowship invitation in the mailbox, the actual letter. And first I thought, you know, okay, this is probably they're raising money for something. I don't know. I opened the letter and, you know, I never met Maurice before. I didn't even know that he knew my work or anything like that. I didn't have anybody who could have introduced me to him. I don't know how it happened. So it was such a big surprise and in a way a little bit frightening, but I mean, since I was really a baby, I knew his work, and then when I was a teenager, when I was starting drawing, thinking that might become a profession, I would look at those same books, those very books, trying to learn pen and ink, and he was a master of it, and I remember not really copying, because I was never much of a copier. I was trying to do my things, but looking at the same time at the work of, for example, Maurice's work, and so this connection is really incredibly important for me.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's a beautiful thing, the way that your art has the voice that it does. And yet, it to me, it's that beautiful thing of learning under someone, being influenced by someone, admiring something your whole life, and knowing that that's sort of part of your DNA. It's part of what makes you up. And then to be able to create art, or to create anything of your own, and see the influence there, but yet your unique voice, that I think is a sign of a true master, to be able to have that influence. That's it's quite a gift. Hey, I have to say, I think I've talked about this. I might have even talked about this on recording before, but I certainly talked about it to friends, that your end papers, and this is not a picture book, are some of my favorite. There's such a nice detail that when you leaf through the book quickly, you don't notice it until you just stop and try to look at them more closely, and maybe perhaps I don't even want to say what the detail is, but to let the people listening be surprised. But I like that you put the thought in all the way from the first moment that we meet the book.
Yeah, no, it's I really like to take care of every single element in the book, including the binding, including the end papers, including the jacket. They're all, you know, it's you're designing, and it's not just me by myself. It's the editor, it's the art director, it's the designer, it's the production people. So I'm really grateful to all the Chronicle people. Especially, you were talking about the colors before.
Yes.
You know, you could do like beautiful, great colors in your originals and be happy with it, and then the wrong scanning or the wrong printing, the wrong paper, the wrong ink can destroy that work, you know. In this case, and I have to say that I'm being very fortunate with the people I've worked with so far, but especially in this case, because we're talking about this book, the production here is beautiful. The Chronicle production people did a wonderful work.
They do.
And my colors are not always easy to get right. So I'm very grateful to them.
It's so, yeah, the colors are so, to me, I think of a child sitting down with watercolors and painting, and how easy it is with watercolor for the color to get carried away and become very, very dark. And yet your colors just have such a light touch. It just, it feels like a control that I imagine children watching you, learning from you when they're seeing you paint, or when they hear you talk about your process at a visit, a school visit. To learn that, and to learn that is where the practice comes into play.
I always, when I talk about the technique with the kids, I always want to make sure that when I explain or when I show how I do it, that they know that it's not the only way. There are so many different ways to use the same tools, that say, this is the way I do it, but do it however you want, however you feel it. Just experiment and do it yourself, because that's how you learn. You don't learn like really observing someone doing it, because then you just learn that way. But just take the brush, take the watercolors, take some water, take some paper, and just do it without thinking too much.
Yeah.
Especially that young age where you just have to have a good time with your with the colors. That's important. But yeah, the way I do it is, I build it with layers. So if you see the drawing and the very first stages, the colors are very, very pale. And then slowly I let it dry, and I add a layer, I let it dry, and I make some areas darker, some other areas I let them be lighter, so brighter. So it's really a patient work. It's a balancing work.
Ah, well, goodness, it's worth it. I love, it makes me think too, we were talking about Maurice Sendak's books and Little Bear, and in your book, Two Mice, I like that the trim size is smaller, and that it's just this, it's a book for a young reader, and the counting 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, it's just, it's got such a beautiful rhythm to it, and the feel, I can tell, now talking to you, it's all clicking in my mind, that you are with this book, or all of your books, every step of the way, to make sure that the details are sort of tweaked just the right way to share the experience that you have in mind for your readers.
Yeah, Two Mice is another example of a book that I'm very happy with the result. And again, I have to thank my editor there, Diana Stevenson. You were talking about at Clarion.
Yeah.
You were talking about the sequence 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. You know, this book probably has the simplest text of any other book, the shortest. I think it's like 56 words or something like that. And many repeat, because I'm including 1, 2, and 3. So they repeat a lot. But that sequence, 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, I got to really through a painful process, because I did want to have a sequence, but I couldn't get it really as regular as this one is for a long time. And at a certain point, I had decided that it was okay if I had something like I still using those three numbers, but in not necessarily in such a clear, a clean order. But I thought I could do like 1, 3, 2, 2, 2, 1, repeating the numbers as well. And then it's there when my editor told me, look, I think it works if it's a regular sequence. It can be 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, however you want it, but it needs to be regular. And I go like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can pull it off. But then I really sat there with that imposition from the editor. I was able to get it. But again, it's the simplest text I've ever written, and it was the most difficult to write.
I think that sometimes is excuse me. I think that's sometimes what makes it pulled off so well.
Yeah.
My goodness. I
well.
Let me get a drink of water. My goodness. Yeah, and I like that in Two Mice, there's this sort of great, again, paying attention from the very first note. If you jump into this book, if you jump into the title page, then you just think, oh, we're starting with, well, here's the book and here's Two Mice, and okay, so we're starting with three cookies. But no, we look for the very first invitation to the story, where we start with one house, and there is, it makes the title, I mean, you did this in This Is Not a Picture Book as well. The yes. title is part of the story. We are taking care of the story. You are taking care of the story from the moment you open the book. And that really provides, I think, a stage for there to be a unified experience that we get to start as soon as we open, not just we turn to the title page and then you take your first breath and then you get to read, but we're in it. And I just had a lot of fun with Two Mice. I, especially reading it to my 5-year-old, I loved that wherever the point was early on when he clicked into the fact that we were doing counting up, counting down, yeah. immediately he knew at the page turn that whatever the object was that you were going to talk about, he knew the number. And that ownership was something special for him.
That's nice. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. So while you're making this work, I can't ignore this fact, Sergio, that while you're making your books, you have amazing company. Anyone that's friends with you on Facebook or wherever, I know that you've shared this openly and so did the others, but to be in a studio space with Sophie Blackall and with
Brian.
With Brian, I would say, with Brian Floca and with everyone, Edie is in the two, right? Eddie Hemingway.
We should mention them all at this point.
Please, I love it.
Eddie Hemingway and Johnny Bemelman's Mark Channel. Those are the four people I share the space with.
What happened that you were all together and like, why don't we all blow up the children's literature world by having the same space together?
I don't know. It was kind of a casual thing that happened, because it was actually supposed to be a brunch at my home. I wanted to have a few people over for brunch, and there was an email thread where we were trying to find the right time for everybody, the right day that would work for everybody, and we went on for months. and then I don't know if it was Sophie or John Rocco at one of the original five was John Rocco, when he lives still in New York City. And either he or Sophie were looking for a studio. And I was not looking for a studio. I was renting a room at a friend's house, and I was happy with it. But when they say, we're going to go see this place, this big studio in Gowanus in Brooklyn, and we all lived in Brooklyn then. And I say, okay, I just come, say hi. But I'm not interested, but I'm happy to come and say hi since you're close by. And I went, and then I saw the space, and it looked pretty nice, and I liked the people, and it was close to my home. And I said, well, I'm gonna try, because I never shared the studio before, and I was not sure if I could do it, if I was afraid that I would be too distracted, and I work so much better like this, because when you're by yourself, you waste so much I mean, I waste a lot of time anyway, but still. But when I realize that when I'm by myself, I waste even more time. Because not that anybody is checking on what I'm doing, but I mean, maybe Brian does. No, I'm kidding. The thing is that you feel, you know, the other people working, doing great work, and you go like, okay, I cannot be stupid and just waste my time today. So I have to do something too. You know, that's how it works.
Right. That it's sort of accountable. Holds you accountable that, oh, they're all working. I need to make sure that I'm focusing. Oh, are we breaking for coffee? Good, let's talk.
Of course. Yeah, of course. There is always that. And then if you have some doubts, if you have questions, if you have to do something, if you have to say something stupid, you can just, you know, get up and say and bother the others.
Well, and I imagine even if it's unintentional, just the small ways that you are influencing one another's work, whether it's through commenting on someone's art or helping with some advice like that, or even just watching the others and seeing their technique in the way that just it could just slightly influence the tools you're using or the whatever approach you're using to make the art. That's something really special, I think.
Yeah, and we, you know, we all have, you know, Eddie, Johnny, Brian, Sophie, and myself. We all have such different styles that there is no risk of being copied or copy or being swept. That is something that you need to think about, right? And
yeah,
but and it's, I mean, they're all great people, so I think they trust me as well. But when we share the hints of ideas that we might have or the very first sketches, and nobody's is afraid to show a bad drawing just because we all know that we all do bad drawings, and so it's good. It's actually very you feel free that you can trust in sharing anything that you want to share.
Oh well, I'm glad that that's working out for you. I can't wait to start seeing you all for Christmas or something. Illustrating one another's picture books, just to show, like, here's my gift. If I just so you're not afraid of me influencing you, this is what it would look like if I redid your cover, like the Sergio Rusia version of Finding Winnie or something.
Sure. Locomotive. Oh my god.
Oh, that's so wonderful, though. And how great that you're around people that you just admire, that you can just be excited for one another. That's great.
Yeah.
Aye. Well, Sergio, what else are you working on? What else do you have coming out soon?
Well, these days I'm doing the sketches for this. I don't know if you know these books. They came out. It's going to be a reissue. So Athenaeum is republishing two books by Florence Perry Heidi. One is called Tales for the Perfect Child, and one is called Fables You Shouldn't Pay Any Attention To. And they're great books. They're very funny. Florence Perry Heidi was an amazing writer. And I don't know if you... She's the one who wrote the Three Horn trilogy that Edward Gorey illustrated.
I do know those, 70s. Yes.
And these books were originally illustrated by Victoria Chess, who I really love her work. And actually, when I was asked to re-illustrate them, I felt a little weird. I was very happy. At the same time, I love those drawings. I feel like if I were the publisher, I would just republish the books the way they were, because Vittoria Chess's drawings are so strange and original and quirky, and they're really odd and slightly disturbing the way is good, the way, you know, a good disturbing, but of course, anyway, I was happy to do it. And so they're not picture books, they're chapter books. There are practically portraits of different kids, characters, and so I'm doing this black and white washed drawings, and then I add one flat color on them. In the first one, the Tales for the Perfect Child, that will come out next summer, like in 2017.
The
color is blue, and the next one would be green. And so I'm doing now I'm starting the finished drawings for the second one. The stories are so funny and subtle and dark.
I love, I feel like I would be missing a great opportunity if not to bring things back full circle and to recall your story of when you were younger, seeing a chapter book and just skipping ahead to the pictures.
Yes.
And now you have the opportunity to make those pictures.
Yes, I know. In this case, though, I would be okay with them because there is a picture on every page. So
yeah.
It's safe.
That's wonderful. Well, congratulations for that opportunity. That'll be amazing to get to see you do that.
Thank you.
All right, well, no, go ahead.
No. I was just saying that the other thing I'm working on, I just actually finished, I'm working on the cover, is the illustrations for a picture book written by Michelle Robinson and published by Clarion.
Okay.
It's called and The Robot Went. That's how it's called.
All right. Cool. Fun stuff. Well, good. It sounds like you're staying busy, Sergio.
This is wonderful. Yeah, no, I'm very. I cannot complain. Sometimes I even have. It's good. My agent Jennifer Loughran has been really great, and so was my late agent before Jennifer, George Nicholson, who was. Yes. I don't know if you know.
I've heard. Yeah, I've heard of the name.
It was an amazing editor from decades, and then in the later years, he became an agent, and I was very lucky that he took me on and so I worked with him for a few years
Yes. Well, I'm glad that life has been so good to you, to have these beautiful picture books coming out, to have the great friends that you do in your studio space. We were talking earlier about you returning from the Bologna Children's Book Festival. I'm so
yes.
glad that all of these blessings are happening, that you are continuing to get into schools and speak to children.
Yes.
Congratulations again, and thank you so much for your time to come on and speak to me tonight. That meant a lot to me.
Well, thank you. It was great talking to you.
Sergio, I'd like to give you the last word before we go. And I mentioned this to you ahead of time, so let me set you up this way. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning, and I'd love to share a message from them to you. What can I tell them from you?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this since you told me earlier, since you wrote it in the email, and it's kind of frightening. To have this power, you know, you can say whatever you want. a message. The word message already scares me a little bit. And I remember, I have a daughter who's now 16, Viola. But I remember when she was in elementary school or middle school, she's a very good writer. But I remember her being very upset with the teacher because often they would say, okay, you wrote this thing, this story, it's very great, it's very beautiful, very well written, but what is the message? And she was so upset about it. It's like, well, do I have to say what the message is? You know, just enjoy the story. If you really think it's good, just read it and enjoy. Why do I have to, me, the author of this piece, have to? And I agree with her completely. So maybe what I can tell these kids is beware of books with a message that is too clear, that is in your face. You know, if you feel that there is a message before you enjoy the story, there is something wrong with that book.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Molly Idle returns with a brand new Flora book, Flora and the Peacocks. So beautiful. Such exquisite choreography. And after that, Cale Atkinson returns to the podcast to share Explorers of the Wild, his newest picture book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.